This is iUniverse Radio. iUniverse Radio is brought to you by iUniverse, the leading book marketing, editorial services, and supported self-publishing company. iUniverse Radio is produced by TogiNet Radio, on the web at toginet.com.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for iUniverse. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is The Wise Leader, Doing the Right Things for the Right Reasons. And our authors, our co-authors, Paul D. Houston and Stephen L. Sokolow. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Glad to talk with you. This book, apparently, and I'm not a great genius, but is designed for leaders and designed for people in business. Am I understanding that correctly?
That is true. It's also for aspiring leaders. In some ways, it's both for people who have leadership positions, but in other ways, we're talking to everyone, because at different times in our lives, we all have leadership roles, and whether that's as a parent or just as a colleague, and this work is really not only for people in their professional lives, but it's for the leadership in their own personal lives.
I'm seeing some chapter headings that underscore that. Chapter 15, the wisdom of operating from a base of compassion. The wisdom of hope over fear. Those are some strong chapter headings. The wisdom of love. You also quite frequently refer to love or compassion in this book. What is your motivation for underscoring that particular trait?
Well, I think there's probably two motivations. One is it's a topic that's not talked about enough. It's really interesting. Steve and I were both in leadership positions for many years. And when you started talking to people about love, they started going, where's the door? What? They got very nervous because it's not a topic that people are used to using, particularly in the area of organizations or what have you. So it's a needed topic. The other reason I think we included it is I think both of us agree that it's the base for everything else. If you don't have this sense of openness of the heart, it allows you to, first of all, love yourself, and then through that, start loving other people. It's very hard to empower them. It's very hard to act with compassion, act with a sense of forgiveness, and the other things that we try to promote the book. So it's almost like the starting point for operating for everything. But it's also a topic that really needs more discussion, I think, than it tends to get, particularly in the business world or in formal organizations.
In one of the other publications that you've co-authored, you mentioned the necessity or the importance of the spiritual dimension in leadership. Why do you feel that is important in your concept of leadership?
Well, I think we believe spirituality permeates everything. We try to draw a distinction between religion and spirituality, because religion often leads you down paths of that end up in places of disagreement and ruling people out of things. When you look at all sorts of formal religions, they all have this underlying base of compassion, of forgiveness, of sense of other, and these sorts of things. We see those as more the spiritual principles. It's sort of, if you would look at it like a computer, it's sort of the operating system for everything else. And so we just try to recognize that it is we did a book together called The Spiritual Dimension of Leadership, which really got into that. But it's really a sense of what operates underneath. And I ran a formal organization for a number of years, a national organization for school leaders. And I would speak two or three times a week to these different groups, and I would bring in the topic of spirituality. When I first started doing it, I was a little hesitant because I thought it might be very awkward. What I found was that was the thing people wanted to talk about after the speech was over, because they felt that there was something missing in their leadership. There was a missing ingredient that they had not been taught in school, that they didn't talk about with their colleagues, but they recognized that there needed to be more to leadership than just what they read in books or what they studied in a course.
I'd just like to add that so many people use the word spirituality in different ways that Paul and I try in our work to be very clear that what we mean when we use that word is that there are several elements. Spiritual core values are values that enhance life. They are related to things that help us connect to other people. They help us connect to the natural world. And they're related to some sense that there is a force or a power, and we don't really care how you refer to it, that is higher than us. And that so that when we use that term, we're referring to our connection to that force, our connection to other people, our connection to the natural world, and again, those things that enhance our lives.
How does an attitude of gratitude play into good leadership?
Well, we have found as leaders, and I don't think we're alone in this, as a matter of fact, I think there's some recent research being conducted at the Wharton School by Adam Grant on the power of gratitude in the workplace. We have found that when gratitude is expressed from a genuine place, which brings us back to the heart, when gratitude comes from the heart, it is quite empowering. Every one of us wants to be appreciated for what we do. And when the leader, another person, expresses gratitude for the contributions that people make, for the way they do what they do, our experience is that we use a phrase in the book, it's kind of like the miracle grow of life. It tends to foster the desire in people to want to do more rather than less.
I was just going to say it's a multiplier, as a multiplier effect. And when it's genuine, it has to be genuine, obviously. But when it's genuinely expressed, as Stephen said, it empowers and grows people to the next level and makes them want to try harder. And when you express how much you appreciate what they've done or what they're capable of doing or what have you, it really tends to drive them towards being more engaged than they already were. The other thing that another aspect that we talk about in the book on gratitude, which may be seem a little unusual, is we talk about being grateful for the bad things as well as the good things. Because we think that sometimes the bad lessons that you get, the bad things that happen in an organization or to you personally, are often the most powerful lessons in terms of enhancing your own growth and the transformation into a better place. And so when we talk about attitude of gratitude, we're talking about being grateful for everything, good and bad.
Yeah, Chapter 1, you have a segment, The Weaknesses Within Our Strengths Help Us to Understand Life Lessons. And that underscores that observation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. We all have both strengths and weaknesses, and we can learn from both of them. And the weaknesses are potential areas where, through reflection, we can grow and become more effective, which ties into another one of the core principles, which it has to do with our life lessons, because invariably our weaknesses show up in a way that are there to reveal to us opportunities for growth. And so, we say, when you're having difficulties in life, when your weaknesses show up, it's an opportunity to reframe what's happening to you as an opportunity to grow and become better at what you do.
You've managed to pen 288 pages. In addition to being instructional, would you also call this a motivational book?
We hope so. We were motivated writing it and living it. And, I think the genesis behind the whole thing is to try to help people. And as Steve said, leaders come in all sizes and shapes. And if you're a parent, you're a leader. The role is so pervasive in our society, and so how do you help people do a better job at leading? Because leading is about creating action from others, and so how do you motivate people then to do the right things for the right reasons, as we say in the book? Because it's not enough, in our view, just to simply do the right things, but if you're doing some of the right things for the wrong reasons, the outcome will not be as good or as powerful as it could be as if you have a better motivation behind it. So it really is about motivation at all levels, being motivated for the right things and then helping motivate others to do their best and be more empowered in doing that.
I would add to that,
yes,
Jay, that the organization that we run is called the Center for Empowered Leadership. And the element of motivation for us is tied into bringing out the best in people and to bring out the things that are already in them. And so what the motivation does is to remind people of things that they already know at some level and help bring those elements into their present consciousness in a way that they can then bring them into the way they are actually functioning and practicing. And from that point of view, it becomes motivating because you become sort of the better version of who you are.
How would you introduce this book to someone and get them interested in reading it?
Well, I would say that, and Paul and I believe this, that these universal core values are in all of us, and that the one of the things that we try to do in the book is to say, if people will pay attention to the values that we write about that are very familiar to everyone and every group that we get to address, that what happens, it's almost like a seed that gets the proper water and nutrition, and that seed begins to grow into a plant or into a tree and gain in stature and power. And therefore, we all have kind of good things within us that we would like to see mature and grow. And our book plays that role for people if they're open to it.
I was just going to add that there's a thin line between a wise leader and a wise guy. And I think that what we're trying to say in the book is that wise leaders are other-directed. It's not about them, it's about everyone else. And if they can effectively focus on that outer world while working on their own issues, I mean, we all have our own issues to improve and work on, but to always do things for others or do things with others in mind, that makes you more of a wise leader and moves you out of being a selfish, wise guy.
Good advice, absolutely. And I've seen that in other strong leadership. Was there anything complicated or difficult about putting this book together, about assembling the thoughts and values that you have espoused here?
Well, one of the things that was complicated was how do two people write a book rather than just one of us or someone taking turns, and how can we express the ideas that Paul and I believe in deeply with a common voice? And so we think we figured out how to do it, but it was a challenge.
I would just add that I think that to a large extent, the challenge of writing the book was to live what we were writing about by being other-directed. And so the book grew out of hundreds of hours of dialogue that Steve and I had, and the complicating factor for that was most of the time I was in some other place in some other part of the country in a different time zone, and so we had these ongoing efforts to talk to each other and to discuss these topics in depth with each other, even though sometimes time and geography was a real challenge. But we also did it by listening to each other and really, I think, valuing what the other person had to bring to the table. And to me, that's sort of the essence of the core behind what the book's about. And so we had to model that in our own work to make it happen.
Tell me the turnaround time. How long did it take to put The Wise Leader into print?
It's been two answers, right, Steve?
One was like 5, 8, or 9 years from when we started these discussions, so maybe a little longer, to what, a couple of years of actually doing the work and polishing. The dialogue started probably a decade ago. And sort of pre-dialogue started a decade before that, where Steve and I discovered that we had a lot of shared values, and then we also discovered that we tried to use a lot of those shared values in the day-to-day work we were doing, and that led us to deeper dialogues about that those topics, which then led us to actually writing about it.
The key to the dialogues is that we took the basic values that we had agreed upon, and we recast them as questions, and we recast subtopics throughout the book as questions. And then with each other, just as you're doing with us, Jay, we wrestled with those questions and used a collaborative process where we listened to each other, added, clarified as we really thought through these ideas, and allowed for not only our conscious knowing, but our unconscious knowing to emerge in the process. And we actually teach this dialogue process to others because we believe in the collective wisdom of humanity, and that we all have a lot to say, and we know a lot about these core values. And if you can just create the right conditions, people will bring a lot to the table. In addition, you know, we're hoping that our work serves as sort of an impetus for people to go even deeper into these ideas, because we all have something to say very worthwhile about them.
Gentlemen, this is an ambitious work. Why do we need another book on leadership?
Paul, you want to say something first?
Well, turn on the television or pick up the paper. It's pretty clear that we have a lot of leadership in the world, the local, state, national, international level, that doesn't always demonstrate the kind of wisdom you'd like to have from your leaders, the kind of other-directed, the sense of compassion, the sense of empowering others, all these things that we try to cover in the book, seem to be sorely missing from a lot of the leadership in today's world, which tends to be much more self-centered and self-promoting. And so we think that there's really a crying need for people to consider an alternative way of leading from what we're being modeled so much of the time.
I would add to that that there are many books out there on managerial skills, technical skills of leadership, and I'm sure those books are needed. But we have found that the missing piece is wisdom, which we define as people who can do the right things at the right time, in the right way, for the right reasons. The question is, how can we cultivate leaders who can do that, leaders who are wise? And we believe that the core values that we write about, when practiced, will in fact lead to wiser leadership in any field.
Well put and beautifully said. Thank you for sharing that information. The book title again, and one I would recommend to anyone that feels they are destined for leadership, the title, The Wise Leader, Doing the Right Things for the Right Reasons, and our co-authors, Paul D. Houston and Stephen L. Sokolow. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. Where do we get copies of your book?
You can get it at a number of sources, Amazon.com, the Barnes & Noble website, the iUniverse.com website, and the Barrett Kohler website. So it's available. It's also, you can tap into it from our website, the Center for Empowered Leadership.org.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. We appreciate the opportunity.
For iUniverse, this is J. Douglas Barker.